Yes, welcome back to Motor Mania and Eid Mubarak. And for all those who have been celebrating the festive week of Eid, I'm Damien Reid. This is, of course, the only interactive car show on UAE Radio, where we're going to give you motoring advice. We're going to talk about what's happening in the car world and let you have a voice on road safety issues. And here's a taste of what is coming up. Well, we are going to meet the man who is building a motorcycle and attempting to break a land speed world record in the historic Bonneville Salt Flats in Utah over in the USA. We're meeting, of course, Alan Boiter, the founder of Vendetta Racing, and he lives and breathes motorcycles, sports bikes, bike racing, and now flat-out top-end bikes. We're also continuing our Chinese car streak. Naz has taken the Geely Monjaro out for a spin, and I've been driving the GAC 3 Plus. So we'll give our share of honest reviews on that one a little later on. And, of course, we're joined by automated journalist Noel Ebden is going to join us on the line a little later on from the UK, and in the Shangiato is in the studio, and we'll get to them straight after this.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Motor Mania with Damien Reid.
Naz Chowdhury and myself are now joined by Inta Shangiato, automotive journalist in the studio. Good morning, Inta Shan.
Good morning, Damien.
How's your Eid been?
Quiet. Quiet and road tripping, mostly.
So have you been enjoying the fact that the roads have been empty, or is that not what you've found?
It is a mixture. I think that the traffic has moved to different times of the day. And if you're going to some of the more trafficked spots for camping or pleasure drives or whatever, then those are definitely a bit busier than usual. So everybody, it seems, had the same idea. I was on the roads and heading out of the city. In the city, of course, it's a bit quieter than usual, I'm finding.
Yeah, well, that's the case at the moment. But Monday, is it's all back. It's going to be crazy, apparently.
I'm going to take the day off.
I know. And then add to that is a weather warning as well. So rain, thunder, high winds, the whole lot, apparently. From the early, I mean, I've been looking at the clouds every afternoon going, it's going to rain today, but it hasn't.
Did rain. It did rain a few times.
It did briefly, yeah. But apparently it's really going to hit from Monday. So in Dubai and Abu Dhabi. So yes,
just a, this is why you're not a weatherman, Damien. It's weather really warnings. Going to hit. A technical term.
It's gonna hammer down. it's gonna hammer rain and thunder.
You're amping it up minute by minute.
But how do you prepare for that? How do you?
It's a bit like those signs that say falling rocks ahead. What do you do with this information?
Microsoft Teams meetings, Zoom meetings, prepare to avoid face-to-face contact for a couple of days to stay off the roads.
We're a car show, by the way. We want to encourage people to drive.
That's a very good point. But we want to keep our cars on the road and not end up in junkyards too.
Oh, absolutely.
So you've got to adapt to the conditions. You've got to drive according to the conditions. There's not really much you can do to modify. It's not like driving to the sand where you let the tire pressures out and you can modify.
Put your tires up. Yeah. Don't drive into puddles.
That's simple as that, really, isn't
don't
it?
Don't drive into puddles. If you see it, avoid it. If you don't need to go there, don't go there. Everything can be done via Zoom or Teams on an inclement weather day. We know the struggles we have with irrigation, shall we say.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a question of just keeping yourself safe at all costs. But there are people who live in places like Sharjah and Ajman and so on where there isn't much option, right? If you're commuting from those places, you do have to drive through some tricky conditions. So I would say buy yourself a massive high-riding SUV by Sunday, tomorrow, and you'll be okay.
It's the one time where I go, I need an SUV.
I recommend a Bronco Raptor at minimum.
There you go.
37-inch tires, you will be fine.
Yeah, here's an interesting talker we found during the course. In fact, it just popped up yesterday in the media. And Germany, of all the countries, the country that gave us the speed limitless Autobahn, is considering banning the use of all cars on weekends. Now, here's the story. Germany's Transport Minister Volker Wissing is threatening to ban driving on weekends to meet climate goals if the ruling coalition does not pass reforms on the Climate Protection Act by July. The country's transport sector has been consistently failing to meet its climate targets. So the reforms to the emissions reduction law will mean that climate goals will be reviewed for compliance by looking at all sectors together instead of individually. So if the planned reforms are not passed through Parliament by July 15, Wissing has warned that he would be obliged to submit an, quote, immediate action program that ensures compliance with the annual emission levels until 2030, which would include a driving ban on weekends. I mean, The EU has been pushing for a ban on all new cars with combustion engines from 2035. It's a move that is being met with increasing resistance from politicians and automakers now, some of whom who are facing bankruptcy if they don't go down the EV path. So therefore, they're going, there's got to be a better solution than going bankrupt. Then come sustainable fuels and other options. In fact, only yesterday, just going off topic a little bit, only yesterday, Aston Martin boss Lawrence Stroll officially confirmed his company's about-face on an all-EV future, something which Motomania here broke back in 2022 during an exclusive interview we had with the then CEO Tobias Moers on Dubai Eye, who said that they could change back if a more effective solution such as carbon-neutral fuels could be found. So Germany, I think, is the first one now to sort of really bring this to loggerheads. Are we facing a ban on driving all sorts of cars, everything, every motor vehicle on weekends? I mean, what do you guys think? Could society survive?
Honestly, I think that's ridiculous. I think it's stupid. Yeah. And I think this is politically based, something to do with it's politics, and it's the beginning of the end. I mean, why would you do such a thing in such a country as well? It just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
Obviously, you know, this is one of those things that's a little bit about throwing your toys out of the pram, yeah, and making exactly a point.
But exactly,
ultimately, as an elected politician, your job is to work for the good of the people, not for the good of making headlines. It's not just necessarily about creating an impact, right, and being tough on it. Isn't it surely about working for the needs of the electorate? In this case, weekends are when I want to drive.
Yeah, exactly.
During the week, I'm happy to take a bus or whatever, or, you know, car share or whatever that's legally allowed to save on everything. But in the weekend, that's where I want to go places. I also need to have laundry, things that matter to regular people. And if you can't go anywhere on weekends, imagine how grumpy everybody's going to be if they're all stuck indoors
The weekend. I mean, I'm thinking more from
all the classic car owners. Well, what are they going to do?
I mean, there's that. But I'm thinking also more from
think of the classic car owners.
I know. I'd probably take a sneaky morning off during the week then. but I think more from a commercial side of things, I'm thinking of, because it's a blanket ban on all vehicles. So how do weekend workers get to work? How do deliveries happen? How do couriers survive? How do, you know, trucks that deliver the morning bread to all the bakeries in the morning. I mean, how, you know, there has got to be something in that. But anyway, that's something to think about, and I'm just glad that the EU, well,
it's insanity.
Let's hope. I mean, it has been brought up yesterday, but let's hope that I have full faith that the UAE is smarter than Germany on that one, and we'll keep our cars going for quite some time on the weekends. But if you do have any thoughts on the thoughts of driving on, should there be a ban on all cars on the weekends? Let us know 4001 or send us a WhatsApp to 04871 5500.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Motor Mania on Dubai Eye 103.8.
This is Motor Mania. I'm Damien Reid. Aidan Mubarak to everyone who has tuned in this morning, and still with Naz and Imtiaz as well. And, well, we're continuing our Chinese car review streak. It's been a bit like that the last few weeks. And if you've just gifted yourself a Chinese car for Eid, well, tell us about what it's like and how you got there. Let's get firstly straight into the little runaround that I had a few weeks ago, the JAC S3 Plus. So it's the JAC is the name of the company, and as the model is the S3 Plus.
Not to be confused with a GAC.
No,
right?
In fact, I was in the first half of the show, so I did actually confuse them very briefly, but no, different. This is actually distributed through Rostamani. GAC is through Gagash. So the car I had, the S3 Plus, it's the baby car. In fact, the model here, it's a bit of an old model now. It was originally launched in 2013 at the Shanghai Motor Show. And for whatever reason, we don't get the latest facelifted model that came out in 2019, but we do get the previous facelift of 2016. And we get a modern interior, so it's a little bit of a hybrid, because I think from what I've seen just through online browsing, we've got the more modern interior in this car, a little bit fresher. It has a large floating touchscreen that connects your phone, although it did struggle to pick up Dubai's top radio station, even in town, but it does have wireless charging, adaptive cruise control, and lane departure warning. Here's the kicker: for 55,900 dirhams, that's attractive to a lot of people for a first car. Three trim levels: comfort, luxury, and elite. Now, I'm not sure what our car was, but I'm guessing with the six speaker CD and MP3 touchscreen, USB ports, leather, in inverted commas, interior, vegan leather, if you want to put it that way, split folding rear seat and cruise control. I'm guessing our version was the Elite. Had six airbags, hill start assist, electronic brake distribution, hydraulic brake assistance, rear camera, tyre pressure monitor. So a lot of that stuff. It's a 1.6 litre, four-cylinder, 118 horsepower, 150 newton metres. So no firecracker. 0-100 kilometre time, they say about 11 and a half seconds. With a CVT transmission, which everyone knows I love, not really. there's some other motoring websites who have been describing it as powerful, but like honestly, take it from me, it's not. Drive it for what it is. It's a city car. It's good in the city. But I took it out to the Hatter Hills and, it struggled a little bit. It rolls through corners at a modest pace.
That's not what it's made for, though.
Exactly. I mean, it's a slightly oddball shape.
It's a fish out of water.
Because it's nearly as tall as it is wide. So it's only 125 millimetres wider than it is tall. Mm-hmm. So because of that, you get a feeling it's kind of sitting on it rather than in it. So it rolls through corners a little bit. Don't try and treat it as like a sports SUV. I said it is what it is. The CVT did struggle on the steeper inclines. It was revving a lot between the gears, but that's not uncommon with CVTs. That's not a really complaint against the car. It's a complaint against the CVT transmission as a product. 3-year warranty, 16-inch wheels. I guess its nearest competitors would be the Renault Duster, which is a little bit cheaper again.
Ah, okay.
Or the Ford EcoSport, which it looks a bit like, in fact, a lot like, which is more expensive. So overall, for what it is in the city, I didn't mind it. I just wouldn't take it on a run. But then again, that's not what it's made for. Mm. The biggest takeaway here is it gets you into a brand new car for under 60,000 dirhams for those who are desperate to get into a new car. So there are buyers out there who are after it. If that's what you're after, a city car to get from Media City to the marina or maybe down to Old Town or whatever else, it's fine. So there you go.
Okay.
Naz, you had a Chinese car as well, but at a different end of the range.
Yeah. So just going back to this confusion between JAC and GAC very quickly.
Yeah.
You see, a lot of these Chinese manufacturers aren't very creative with their names. So JAC is actually Jianghao Automotive Group.
That's right.
And GAC is Guangzhou Automotive Group. So
yes.
The same as you've got BIAC, which is Beijing International Automotive Group, and then
SAIC, Shanghai Auto.
Exactly.
International. You're kidding. And they're all sold in the UAE, as far as I'm aware.
And that's exactly what they are. They're just... I think they're state-sponsored, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
A lot of these brands are state-sponsored, and whichever ones do well will eventually stand up on their own two feet and start competing in the global sphere, which is what some of these seem to be doing. So enough about that. Going back to the Geely Manjaro, which I discussed little bits throughout the show. So what is a Geely? It's a huge brand. They're big enough to buy Volvo, so it tells you how big they are. backed by one of the main
and Lotus and Polestar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Lotus and Polestar, backed by one of the main dealers here, AGMC. So what is the Manjaro? The Manjaro is honestly, like, it blew me away. It's an incredible car. You know, you'd compare it to, you can say a compact SUV, so you'd compare it to, you know, Tiguan, Q5, you know, X4, that kind of region. Similar drivetrain, so it's 2-liter turbo. 8-speed gearbox, 4-wheel drive, permanent. Now, what really surprised me with this car is the level of luxury and comfort. I mean, you sit inside the car and you've got 3 digital screens going all the way across.
Yeah.
Right? You know, if you were to spec up a Taycan, you'd have to pay 50, 60 grand for that, right? You've got a heads-up display, which is 23 inches. Like, you've got full Bose sound system with surround sound. The electronics on it, 540-degree camera, like the spec and the trim in what terms of what they did was absolutely incredible. But you think, okay, Chinese car, bells and whistles, they throw all the electrics in for free. What does it actually drive like? It drives really well. If I'm not mistaken, it's got 19-inch, 20-inch alloys, 4-wheel drive, very, very capable car. I'm quite a spirited driver, so like I like my cars low and sporty. I mean, there was one point where I had it around the corner where it started to squeal a bit, but like... It is a 4-wheel drive. It drives as such, and it's really, really capable. And what strikes me as well is in terms of build quality. I mean, you slam the door is closed.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, it's leather, stitched up really nice. The boot space is incredible. in summary, it really, really impressed me. I'd say this is, you know, we talk about the 180 Chinese brands out there. I'd put this among the top in terms of quality, in terms of build. And it's interesting to see. I mean, the starting prices, I think, are just shy of 120, going up to 135 for the fully fledged model. And now what's interesting is they're releasing, I went to the launch of the Okavango a couple of weeks ago. And that's a 7-seater. So that would compete with the Terramount, for argument's sake. Mm. But that's sub 100,000 dirhams. I don't think it would come with as many bells and whistles as the Manjaro came with. But still, if the Manjaro is anything to go by in terms of build quality, then the Okavango is going to do very, very well here for a quality 7-seater, sub 100,000 dirhams.
So that would be up against probably the MG 7-seater as well. That's around about the same. I think it's about just on 100,000 dirhams from memory.
So to put that into perspective, people I don't know would be like, oh, should I get an MG? So I see Manjaro, which one looks better? Okavango. But the build quality is what speaks volumes here. I mean, Geely really, really focused on the build quality and the trim. I invite you guys to have a look at the showroom, take a test drive yourself. It's on Etihad Road, AGMC. Mm. But really, really surprised me in incredible car.
Yeah, amazing stuff. I mean,
quick question. Sorry, you said it had a 540 degree camera. How could it have more than 360 degrees?
Okay, good question. So this is really interesting because the Jatour T2 has the same thing. And it is not a trick question because I do have the answer for this. When you put it into reverse mode or drive it, what happens is it gives you almost... So you see the 360-degree camera that comes on the top with some cars. This is actually an angle.
Yeah.
So you know when you've got Google Maps, you can do the 2D view or the 3D view.
Yeah.
So it's giving you a 3D perspective.
Gives you like the rear three-quarter shot.
The rear three-quarter shot. And that's how they get the 540 in. So you've got front left, back right, but you've also got floor and a bit of sky as well.
I've got to admit, I saw that in the press kit the other day, and I just deleted it. I'm not going to go down there. 360 is 360.
But that's pretty impressive, though.
But my eyes only see 180. Do you know what I mean?
But it is fairly impressive to see that. The Jatour T2 has the same thing. The big 12-inch screen, as soon as you put it into reverse, and because it superimposes the car image on the screen, you can actually see, as you turn the steering wheel, you can see the wheels turning as well. So it's pretty impressive.
This used to be Land Rover tech. I think what gets me about these cars... it's a brilliant thing then, and it's a brilliant thing now. I think everybody should have it. Okavango, Manjaro, all these cars make me sound like they're like really tough, rugged off-roaders with big bull bars and the like, but they're not. They're crossover SUVs. And the Manjaro, and this is just a me problem, nothing to do with the car. I keep getting confused with Pajero every time you say it. So I'm like, is
because in some markets, the Pajero is a Montero.
Exactly. I'm totally lost. Montegero? Like, what's happening?
So I think they're going by this whole African theme in terms of...
But is there any African touches in the car?
You know what? I need to get the video out and maybe we can post it. The launch of the Okavango, where they literally brought in this incredible, like, some musicians, some African musicians with the drums and things like that. And they're really punching the African theme for some reason.
But is it made in Africa?
No, I think it's just suitable for the rugged roads of Africa. Maybe.
It's funny that. It's an interesting take. I mean, I like interesting cars. Like BYD also has that musical thing going on with their cars, right? They have seat handles or door handles in the shape of musical clef notes. And why?
Oh, really?
Why not? It's just musical themed.
I can't, I don't know.
It's quirky. I
mean, you had a bit of experience during the, when you did the Mille Miglia, you were running around in the GACs a fair bit, weren't you?
As service
vehicles and backups and emergency vehicles to get people out of trouble in their older cars. What was your experience with those?
So those are great looking cars. They're pretty comfortable. There are lots of gadgets and gizmos. To drive, they just drive like any sort of 1.5 turbo sedan. Nothing exceptional or negative to say, really. But they look great. Mm. And they got plenty of punch for where it counts. So, but a very aggressively styled car.
Yeah.
And they were just good workhorses. But they had the benefit, the GACs, of being quite nice to look at. So they're very distinctive. Yeah. And, you know, though they're Chinese cars, as the pejorative goes, you wouldn't feel sort of let down getting next to like one of these vintage Mercedes. You're like, wow, this is a nice looking car, the M-Pows. Yeah. And they were very well priced. I think they were under 60K with all that trim.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There's some advice on some Chinese cars. Finn has also texted in. Hey, Finn. Love the show. If you can't drive on the weekend, it's not worth having a car. And I
think that's the point.
1,000% agree with you, yeah. Finn. Always chipping in with some good advice. So, yeah, look, there you go. We're going to be back and talking about more about this stuff in the next issue of Motor Mania. But after the break, we've got a very special guest in the studio. And, Naz, I think you're staying with us for this one. Or are you going to shoot through?
Let's see. There's a few guests coming in.
I'm putting you on the spot. All right, then. In the chat, you're staying with us. And Noel Ebden's going to join us on the line straight after this break. This is Motor Mania, Dubai Eye 103.8.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Motor Mania with Damien Reid.
Yes, welcome back to Motor Mania. This is Damien Reid, and we're joined in the studio by Indushan Giardo. And joining us on Microsoft Teams is Noel Ebden. Good to have you back, although from far away. Yes, you're back over in the UK at the moment, but I didn't want to leave you out of this chat because you've been a part of this this project to an extent, and we are thrilled to welcome a man who has devoted years of his life in the UAE growing the sports bike and motorcycle racing community here. He's especially in Dubai. He's the founder of Vendetta Racing UAE, which he formed in 2007 to compete in the new sports bike championship that was held then at the what was then the newly opened Dubai Autodrome. Loves a good challenge. We all know that because he's going to attempt to overcome a big one. That is setting a land speed record at the historic Bonneville Salt Flats in Utah later this year on a bike that he is currently building. And I'm talking about none other than Alan Boiter. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure.
I remember you joined us many, many years ago on another radio program with Dubai Eye back in the old studios.
Yes.
Still racing bikes and still doing everything you can. First, before we get on to this the topic about Bonneville, Vendetta Racing is your project, your business.
Part-time.
Tell us how that all came about and where we are.
It was grassroots motorsport back in the day when, as you said, when the Autodrome first opened. There was just two of us back then. We started a team. We ran in the local championship. It quickly grew arms and legs. We ended up being over in Isle of Man. We did events there in 2010 and 2012. We started endurance racing in the UK, MotoGP support races in Qatar, and then we moved to off-road racing. We've done Desert Challenge 10 times now. We've done Dakar 3 times, FIM World Championship and rallies. It's mostly an off-road team now with some build projects on the side.
Okay. So, of course, yeah, I mean, Dakar's has really come to prominence in the last few years since it moved to Saudi, and it's got a lot of interest from around the region. But Bonneville, insane project.
It's a bit different.
I mean, I love it. I just love it. But how did it come about?
So the story started, the Dubai Motorcycle Film Festival, which is held at Warehouse 4 with Ian Carlos. One of the main films they had at the time, and this was going back 3 years ago, was about a Swiss team who built a bike based on a Ducati engine with a turbo, home-built, from a small village. The guy who was riding it was also the local butcher. It's a great little movie. But they took the bike to Bonneville and competed and got a world classification in the FIM. And as we're watching the movie and my wife was there and kind of nudging her going, the engine on that bike, I've got one lying in the garage, just sitting on the floor. And from where the film festival was held to where our house is only 4 or 5 kilometers away. And pretty much by the time we got home, it was settled. We were going to Bonneville. Didn't know how, didn't know what on, but we were going to do it.
It's a good thing you don't watch any other films.
Yeah.
You might get all sorts of ideas.
It's expensive and dangerous.
Yeah.
I just love I'd love to go. I haven't been to Bonneville. I'd love to go. It's one of those things I've always enjoyed. And I fell in love with it all over again when I saw, of course, the movie with Burt Munro.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
World's Fastest Indian.
Yeah.
About his story being an Antipodean, a Kiwi, mm-hmm. building his thing, taking it over there, doing it on a shoestring budget.
That's right.
I hate to say it, I can see some similarities.
you're not the first one that's brought that up. And I think that's the spirit of Bonneville. It's still world records are set there.
Yeah.
But it's still got the grassroots. It's still the small garage-built vehicles, bikes and cars, it's not really been taken by the Red Bulls and the Monster Energies of this. It's still very small.
Yeah.
In comparison from motorsport.
Yeah. What is the current record right now? And how many times do you need to do it before it's officially
twice
recognized? Twice.
So the way a record works, it's measured through a measured mile. And there's a certain amount of build-up and a certain amount of slowdown in that measured mile. It depends which course you're on. There's several. It could be two or three courses depending on the event where it's run.
Mm.
I think the course I'm going to be running on eventually, if everything goes to plan, it's going to have like a 3 mile run up, a measured mile, and a three to four mile slowdown.
Yeah.
You have to go through that. It's an average speed through the measured mile, and then you have to turn around and do it again within an hour in a different direction. And that takes into account the wind variation. And then it's an average of the two measurements.
Okay. And what sort of speed are we looking at? What's the goal?
For the class that we're in, I was surprised, and this was one of the things that made us choose to do this, if you like. It's 168 miles an hour and change.
Okay.
Average. Which, in this day and age, with the technology that we've got, is more than achievable.
Mm.
I mean, there's my race bike at the Autodrome will do that kind of speed every single lap.
Yeah.
Now, it's a peak speed. It's not an average speed. But where it gets more difficult is the class that we're running in is it's a 1,000cc two-cylinder class, non-naturally aspirated. So you can run supercharger, turbocharger, which we've got, or nitrous if you liked. But non-streamlining. There's no bodywork whatsoever.
Okay.
So that kind of changes the challenge somewhat. So suddenly that speed is, you're doing that face into the wind, right?
Yeah.
So we've got...
So no complete enclosed fairing.
None whatsoever. You're out there. Wow. I've got a small little peak which covers the clocks.
I'm
going to try and tuck behind. I'm presuming in the rules that's going to be allowed. I might get there and they go, nope, that's streamlining, take it off. Hoping that's not the case.
Noel, you've ridden and raced your fair share of motorcycles in the past. Does this get you thinking as well, or is this like, nah, not for me?
Well, yeah, funnily enough, I still hold the motorbike drag racing record at the Amel Quain strip because they stopped racing straight after I did a quite pathetic time there. So yeah, no, I've got a bit of history with it. I've got a bit of history with this, but I've got two questions really. I mean, one, I'm hopefully going to go with Alan to Bonneville, so I'll actually be there. So I'll be there giving a hand. But the not having a fairing, I think I asked Alan this actually before, because I've actually sat on the bike and seen it in the flesh. You can get, like, cyclists on a velodrome will wear a funny shaped helmet to give themselves a bit of a bit more sort of aerodynamics. Is that allowed? Is that
To a certain point, the helmet regulations are quite stringent, as they are in most motorsport events. It's got to be an FIM homologated helmet. Fortunately, I have one. It's an RI. And it does actually have a little peak around the back of it, which will help with aerodynamics, yeah.
Right.
Can you put any, like, front wing splitters on your helmet or anything like that?
we've even
canards.
we've discussed wings and all sorts of stuff sticking out the back of it. But, yeah, I think the rules are pretty stringent on what you can and can't do.
Yeah. So you manufacture everything yourself here in your garage in Dubai. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. It took about 4 to 6 months of just looking at various designs and what would work. Because wind resistance is the biggest problem you have.
Yeah.
And overcoming that. So the design that I've come up with, and I can't take credit for the design. It's a rare, but it has been used in the past, this design. You have the front wheel, you have me basically lying behind the front wheel and the engine behind me and the back wheel behind the engine. So everything's as low as possible. And the whole bike sits, must be maybe 600 mil high if you're lucky.
Yeah.
It's pretty low to the ground.
About the length of a London bus, is it?
3.6 metres long. It's almost the length of a standard car.
So have you actually ridden it? I mean, have you tried out the riding position in motion yet?
Not yet.
Not yet?
Not yet.
When are you doing this?
In the next couple of weeks.
Right, okay.
The bike got finished last week.
Okay.
Officially finished. We took it for a photo shoot a couple of days ago. Because of the length of the bike, I had to actually take, once the mock-up was made, I had to take the engine out and then the cooler and all the ancillary parts and put it into a different frame, which we called the Frankenbike, to put it on a dyno and tune the engine.
Mm.
Because the engine itself, I mean, it's a standard 998 Ducati engine, but it's got a turbocharger and a massive intercooler hanging off the side of it. So, and a custom ECU. It took 128 dyno runs to get it tuned. We've increased the power by 65%.
I mean, how do you then deal with, you've got the Ducati engine.
Mm.
You now got a turbocharger hanging off one side of it. You've got an intercooler hanging off the other. How do you work out the balancing when you're talking about 160 plus miles an hour?
Don't. I just have to suck it and see how it goes. A lot of it's been looked at, what's been done in history.
Yeah.
Fortunately, Bonneville has been going on for long enough that you can look back in time to see what's worked and what hasn't. And most of the design aspects have been just of ease of use.
Yeah.
You know, a turbocharger hanging in the wind, it's not too far in there, but it's pointing towards the wind, so you'll get some induction forces there. The intercooler actually sits in line behind me, and it's massive because I've got the space, so why not use it, right?
Yeah.
The radiator sits behind that, and the engine sits behind that. So it's as compact as it can be, but there is some stuff hanging in the wind.
Can I ask, how bumpy is Bonneville as a surface? Like, what sort of suspension setup would you need? Because you don't want to have a big bounce.
Considering I have no suspension at the front, I'm hoping it's pretty smooth.
Actually, a good question in the chat. Do you have to run then, like the cars do, like a solid billet wheel, or are you allowed to run, regular-looking wheel?
It's standard wheels. Standard wheels and standard road tires, actually.
Oh, okay.
Which are speed-rated.
Yeah.
The highest, I believe it's a bracketed W tire, which is 163 and over. That's the highest speed rating tire, and that's what the regulations ask for.
So it's a slick tire or a groove tire?
Groove tire.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Once you get back into, I think it's like over 250 mile an hour plus, then you're into specialist tires, billet wheels, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
And one of the things with billet wheels is weight, which is a good thing. Weight is your friend.
Yes.
I've read.
Yeah.
Which is kind of different from building other race bikes that I've been doing over the years.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Motor Mania on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Yes, Motor Mania with you through until midday. And we've got Ip Chanjata in the studio. We've got Noel Ebden via Microsoft Teams all the way from the UK. And a very special guest in the studio, Alan Boyter from Vendetta Racing, who is out to do something fantastic in the next coming months. And that is a world land speed record in the Bonneville Salt Flats with his self-built bike here right in Dubai. Alan, firstly, I guess the question is the date. When is all this happening?
24th to the 29th of August this year.
So not too much time away.
Not at all.
Considering you haven't ridden the bike yet.
Yeah, some small minor details. But
that's going to be solved soon. You've got some testing coming up. Obviously, you've got to test it before you go over, and that'll be done in the region as well. So that's good to keep everything local.
Yeah. Not top speed testings, but yeah, testing enough to give us confidence that we're on the right track before we put it in a container and ship it.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get down to the nitty gritty with this bike. Specs. As you said, it's still a Ducati, still a V twin.
Yep.
Are you running pump gas? Are you running methanol?
Race fuel VP109.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and to be honest, we got the power that we had now, the 190 plus horsepower. We got that with pump fuel.
Okay.
But with the race fuel, it just gives you that bit more confidence for detonation.
Yeah.
And also, it's the same fuel that's available in Bonneville.
Oh, cool.
So that was the main driver of, because you can't get pump 98 gas over there.
Yeah.
But you can get high octane fuel, and it's classed as pump gas, and it's provided by the organizers.
Okay. Yeah. In terms of modifications to the engine, is it fairly production? Have you had to do like
standard?
Completely standard.
It's been rebuilt and rechecked, but yeah, it's standard.
So no billet cranks or anything like that. Just that's amazing. And horsepower?
192.
That's all right.
115 is standard. So it's a good jump.
That's not, and transmission with this one?
Standard gearbox, mm-hmm. but the gearing is hugely different.
Yeah, of course.
Bigger sprocket.
Much taller.
tiny sprocket. I had to modify the rear wheel to fit the sprocket in the back. It's geared for about 240 miles an hour.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Whether it will pull it or not, it's a different story, but it's geared for that.
As a guy who grew up with bikes, to say dirt bikes, desert in the desert, at the racetrack, on the road, how difficult is it to adapt to, firstly, the riding style, I guess, because it's effectively like lying on your stomach on a bed, isn't it? I mean, it's a very, very different style of thing.
The first thing I actually did before, when I had the design in mind, I actually made a mock-up. I had the engine sitting, as I said, the engine was lying on the garage floor, so I mocked that up with the wheels to get an idea of the length and used electrical conduit and just welded that together to get a rough idea of the frame and lay over it to kind of get the idea of what height you wanted, the angle, because you don't want to be pointing down. Flat's also a problem. So it does actually point up slightly, so my head's elevated.
Yeah.
And it was just from there the frame design came from.
Yeah, yeah. Noel, this will be your first trip to Bonneville, is that right?
Yeah, correct. And I sat on that mock-up and, I sort of tried to sit on it, and then Alan sat on it, and that was the point where I thought he was completely mad. but I've got a question, actually. You make it sound so easy, Alan. You and I have been riding bikes since we were born almost. And you say, oh, at the end, you just turn around and come back again. Now, I've seen this bike, and I've seen how close the pegs are to the floor. How do you turn it around? It's as you say, the length of the bike. How on earth? I mean, that's a pretty big turning circle, I reckon. But how do you actually turn it around again?
There's not much.
And how much time do you have at the end? How much time do you have at the end to turn around and come back again?
There is regulations of an hour. You've got an hour to turn it around. But the way the event is run, if you make a qualifying run for a record, which is 1% over the record in one direction, your bike actually goes to impound. It goes to Parc Fermé.
Right, okay.
And they hold it there. So you have an hour to work on it, and it's held.
Yep.
And then you get to run the next morning when the salt is fresh. Because there's so many other competitors there at the time, it's very difficult to run both directions. Whereas this way, it's more controlled. You're still, in essence, having that hour, an hour to work on it. You're just not allowed to run till the next day. But turning it round, I've got a small jack which goes underneath it, and you can just wheel it round on a jack. It's like a pallet truck. The back of the car has got a rig where the front wheel goes in, and you can just turn it round with the car.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have much turning circle then?
If I started putting it right turn on here, I might be 90 degrees by Sharjah.
Oh. Yeah. It's more like the Queen Mary or something, isn't
it? Yeah. It's super tanker style turning circles, yeah.
So not very nippy is what you're saying in the Spinney's car park, this one?
No, not at all. We towed it out for the photo shoot a couple of days ago. And once it's off there, and just moving it on a straight bit of road, you know, can you move it forward and slightly through the centre of the road?
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
But it was never designed for that.
I know you haven't been there yet, but what's the atmosphere and what's the community feeling like with the people who go to Bonneville? Because they are kind of a weird bunch of people, to put it very nicely.
Yeah.
But they
it didn't seem very nice at all. But okay.
they live and breathe. They live and breathe the speed run. They're a community that very closely knit, very different to any other style of motor racing, motorsport. What's your interactions with the Bonneville people been like so far?
Super helpful. I mean, everybody's helpful. And I've heard so many stories where people at the event and, parts is broken down on the bike, and somebody who's actually going for the same record will take a part off his bike to give it to somebody else to, use my gizmo, whatever it is, to get your run in. You know, that's literally give you the shirt off the back by the looks of it.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe you're still searching for sponsors and people who can assist you along the way.
Very much so. Like any other motorsport, this is not cheap.
Yeah,
I mean, just shipping a bike across to the US and back isn't a cheap thing. But by the time the build of the bike, the testing, the entry fees, the insurances, it's not a cheap sport. So we're always looking for sponsors.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, we always love a world record here in Dubai. If you do want to get a motorsport world record, get behind Alan, seriously, and put your name on the side of the bike somewhere, and then come back from Bonneville with with a world record. Fantastic to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
We're going to be following you all the way. How can we follow you and follow the journey?
We've got the Vendetta Racing website. We're on Instagram. We've just started a new Facebook page. various social, the standard social media outlets.
Yeah, well, there you go. Don't normally do plugs on the show, but this is a great one. And if you want to get involved, want to be part of a team, get in touch with Alan through the socials and be part of a world record attempt. I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much.
We'll be following it, and we'll get you back in here as the project continues. Noel, I'm sure you're going to be giving us some updates from Bonneville.
Absolutely, yeah. I'll report back live if we can from the as it's happening. So yeah, that should be pretty cool as well. So,
well, fantastic, Alan Boyder. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me
this morning, and all the best with the Bonneville runs. Thanks, Noel, for joining us from the other side.
No problem.
All the best, Imtiaz. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure.
And enjoy the last 2 days of your Eid break before we get stuck back into the craziness when the bad weather hits on Monday.
Yay.
That's about it for you now. And we'll be live again in 2 weeks' time. So if you missed today's show, well, we're going to have the podcast, all of this up live on Dubai Eye's website, 103.8. So join us then. In the meantime, we'll see you back in 2 weeks' time. And that's it for Motor Mania for this week.